We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from The Surveyor, read by Corey Caulfield.
Lewisham Council has decided to start charging £20 for replacement bins after a series of other measures failed to stop its bin population walking. Officers have so far failed to solve the mystery of a Lewisham wheelie bin that was found floating in the Sea of Galilee.
Thanks to Stephen Scott of Camberley for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton, and newcomer to the News Quiz, Chief Newsreader Peter Donaldson. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Fred McCauley. Andy, who has come back to Blighty with a mission to modernise?
Ah, this is our beloved leader, Tony Blair, who returned from his holiday in Tuscany one day later, apparently, than had been planned. I don't know whether he just fancied another day at the Italian government's expense or whatever, but... He's come back and he's saying that he won't let anyone stand in the way of his modernisation of Britain. I don't know what that means. It seems to me that this government uses the word modernisation just means doing what we like. He's going to make everything more modern and he's going to brook no opposition, and he's beginning to sound just a little bit doolally at times. Just a bit.
I couldn't say that, because I'm a newsreader. I wouldn't be allowed to say that, but...
Well, come to think of it, you can't say anything on
I can't say anything for the whole programme, really.
No. I know why he was late coming back, if anybody's interested. It's because he went to France as well. He went to a place called Saint-Martin-d'Oïde.
D'Oïde?
D'Oïde, where he'd been before, where I've been to see him and slept in his bed. There, my wife and I were in this bed at this rather nice house.
Three of them?
Was his approach modern?
I shan't go on.
Did you say, now let's try it the third way?
What is the third way? I still... I'm sorry. I didn't know what the first and second ways were. But, you know, so I think it's confusing to start with the third way. Does anybody know what the third way is?
Anyway, that's why he was late.
2 points. Peter, who's proved that you should never trust a secret to the email of the species?
I wonder. I think I ought to plead the Richard Ingram's amendment. Ignorance. Could it be something to do with Bill Gates?
It is.
It is?
It is. We've now reached a stage that at just the push of a button, you can read the mail of 8 million people.
Exactly the same. It says, hello, my name is Norman, my anorak is blue. One of my shoes is brown.
Most of my email consists of jokes sent to me by the landlord of a pub because I'm a member of a club called the Miserable Old Buggers. Which does good work, but...
What's the website? Is that Ms.Bug...
Ms.Slash.
M-O-B.
M-O-B.
Yes, forward slash, probably.
Certainly not backwards.
Fred, where has British Beef Wellington met its Waterloo?
Oh, yes. Beef's back on the menu, except in France, where they don't want it, because they've got beef of their own, apparently, which they're going to use to block roads, I would imagine. They do with most of the livestock. Not all of it. Some of it's for fun. I think I'm right in saying that beef's not on the cart.
Yes,
you were waiting for some abuse about the French, then, weren't you?
I was hoping for it.
I saw you look at Alan.
But you have to remember, Simon, that Scotland and France have the old alliance. Over 700 years, we've got on just grand with them because we share something in common.
They did let
you can't
money...
ever win a war.
No, but we've started a few.
Yes, the French government has delayed the lifting of a ban on British beef by referring matters to a scientific committee. British officials have described the French decision as an act of complete madness. So those exports of beef did the job after all. The scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. Andy, who reckons the BBC should clean up its act?
Oh, this could be one of millions of people, because there was a lot of BBC bashing. There was Lord Bragg. Is it him?
No.
He was one. BBC got to clean up it. Oh, it's got to do with sex, then, presumably.
I'll give Andy 1 point for being on the right lines. But
I don't know, but I think it's Polly Toynbee.
It is.
And BBC has got this wonderful new serious documentary series called something like Shagging. And this is about the sexual habits of the British, and Polly Toynbee says it's really an excuse for cheap pornography. As if the BBC needed an excuse for cheap pornography. And she got very upset.
That was an article in the Radio Times, which...
Filthy magazine, you know.
Never read it.
They don't use an airbrush anymore. Everything is...
I know, it's...
Full frontal dyke.
In an article in the Radio Times, journalist Polly Toynbee has attacked the BBC for Adult Lives. That was the title, a series of documentaries which she called a porn freak show. Miss Toynbee says the BBC is only concerned with increased audience ratings. A spokesman for the Beeb denied this, saying it's not size that matters, it's what you do with it that counts.
Simon?
Yes?
This show, when's it on?
Peter, who successfully gave Britain a right royal trashing?
Ah, well, that must refer to His Royal Highness Prince Edward, who's been having a go on the other side of the pond. He's trying to make a name for himself there, and he reckons that people don't regard him as a royal over there, they regard him as a human being.
What he said was that people in England sneered at success, and Ardent, which had been in business for 6 years... hasn't turned a profit yet. I don't quite know what he means. You should love him on the strength of that. This wonderful British failure, like Dunkirk.
But
King Alfred.
Be fair, I mean, I sympathise, because there he is. He is a success story. He's dragged himself up from the mean streets of Balmoral. He has made a very good job of being a prince against extraordinary competition. And people just turn around and take the mickey, frankly. And I sympathise with him. There was what I thought was brilliant, though, was that even though he crossed the pond, as Peter put it, he didn't lose his patronising skills. Because he said to these American reporters, over in England, there's just so much baggage. If you have that expression here.
Prince Edward said it was so refreshing that in America he's not judged by his pedigree. They also take into account his bright, shiny coat and lovely wet coat. So, 2 points to Peter. Fred, listen to this. Fred, who believes there's no alternative to Lord Archer?
I think the first thing I should point out to the listeners at home is that, alarmingly, Andy Hamilton was mouthing along to the words of that song. Quite disturbing. Yes, we even got this story up north in Scotland, where the Mayor of London race is being covered. And, you know, we frankly can't wait for the next episode. It's gripping. In fact, and I know Alan's a friend of the man, but...
he's probably slept in his bed.
Lady Thatcher has thrown her weight behind him because she probably thinks he's got a tray of drinks. And I have to say that we have some experience of this, because just last year she threw her weight behind the no to devolution debate that was going up prior to her referendum. And after she threw her weight behind it, Labour just kind of packed their bags and thought, well, our work is done. And and they won by the biggest margin ever. So I think that it's fairly safe to say that it's Lord Archer who asked all his friends to come out and support him, and they both did. I'm even thinking about moving to London at great expense just to vote against them.
There's some extraordinary footage I saw in a documentary about Geoffrey Archer where it's him representing England at athletics at the old White City. And he's disqualified twice for a false start, trying to steal a march on everybody else. Can you believe? Not in character at all. And this has been like 1954 or something, and he's false started the third time, and the commentator says rather earnestly, well, Archer there been false started the third time. Technically, of course, he should be disqualified, but they seem to be allowing him to stay in the race. He thought he was getting away with it even then.
I ran in a relay with him once, but he dropped the bribe.
Now, I've read his book. He ran with Carl Lewis, Jesse Owen, and Batman. He didn't run with you.
And beat them all, didn't he?
He beat them all with one leg tied behind his back. And then he conquered the Matterhorn in the afternoon.
He is reputed to be very thorough in his research.
What does that mean?
Peter's a newsreader. He knows a lot more behind these stories than he lets on.
Because you only tell the half of it, don't you, Peter? You save the rest for dinner parties, don't you?
Absolutely.
We know what you're thinking, though, from the inflections, you know.
Not you, too.
Yeah.
I get letters about that.
Yeah. Prime Minister claimed...
You have been listening.
Lawyers are to get an increase of over 9%.
Baroness Thatcher is backing Geoffrey Archer to become Mayor of London. Archer has promised that his number one priority will be dealing with the rubbish problem. If elected, he promises to stop writing. Alan, who's planning to rat on a princess?
Yes, this is a love rat, a cad, a man in a tattered waistcoat, two-tone shoes, a little roadster, a bogus regimental cravat, and a rakish trilby on one side. He's called James Hewitt. And he is writing a biography, and he has all the love letters that Diana wrote to him from various gyms. Jim Davison, Jim... anyway. But he's not going to be, I think, allowed to publish letters, because a very complicated thing about copyright, about who owns the notepaper, and the crest on the top of it belongs to Buckingham Palace and all that stuff. So he's not actually going to quote the letters, but he's going to refer to them in his forthcoming, as it were, biography. Autobiography.
So it's a good job she didn't send her letters on email. They'd have belonged to everybody, wouldn't they?
He's always gone on about having had relations with her. He's always, you know, every couple of years he comes out and says, oh, I had sex with the Princess of Wales, and, you know, 40 years' time would be a sad old bloke in the corner of the pub going, oh, did I ever tell you? Yes, we've heard it. Prince Charles gone on about that, do you?
The scores at the end of round two are Andy and Peter 7, Alan and Fred in the lead with 9 points. We start round three with a clipping from the South Wales Echo.
Public toilets in Wales come under the spotlight today at a special conference at Cardiff's County Hall. Delegates include Julie Morgan, MP for Cardiff North, who has long been a campaigner for better toilets. She's already attracted more than 100 signatures from MPs of all parties following her early day motion at Westminster.
Thanks to the many of you who spotted that. Andy, who proved that the game of chess is child's play?
Ah, now this is a precocious child who's 8 years old, I believe.
Yes.
Who defeated a chess master. I think what really wound the chess master up was not just that the 8-year-old was trouncing him, but that he kept saying things like, oh, look, I've captured your horsey. When he was moving a piece, he was going... And chess masters aren't used to this. Karpov used to use it to psych out opponents sometimes, but anyway, so... But he's a great hope for the future. Britain will have a chess champion, provided this precocious child doesn't have a nervous breakdown.
8-year-old chess player David Howell sensationally defeated a grandmaster at a tournament over the weekend. David baffled his opponent with a rarely used opening, the Grunfeld defence, which involves sacrificing the Queen's knight for two jelly babies and a Kinder egg. Peter, listen to this music.
Let the wind blow high, let the wind blow low, through the streets in my kilt I'll go. All the lassies say, hello, Donald, where's your trousers?
Oh, God.
That must yes, be the... I was mouthing along.
Well, no, that's just half of it, Fred. Tell the listeners you were dancing over swords.
Peter, whose legal battle is likely to be a seat of the pants affair?
Must be something to do with the wearing of trousers by women.
At school, they're talking about taking the school to court, I think.
No. Well, the Equal Opportunities Commission.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He's not going to get a point for that.
The child's name. I know the child's name.
And the child's name is?
Joe.
Joe.
I'll take half a point.
Half a point. Anyway, so it's being taken to the... it'll be a test case. Will young lads be allowed to wear skirts at school, I think, is an issue that spins out of that. I know I was told I couldn't.
You look very fetching tonight, Andy.
Thank you.
In the move back by the Equal Opportunities Commission, schoolgirl Jo Hale is to take her school, Wickham Comprehensive, to court over its refusal to allow her to wear trousers with her school uniform. Miss Hale's mother noted the attitude of other professions. Since 1995, women barristers have been permitted to wear trousers, though judges have stuck to their usual attire of leather basques, fishnet stockings and high. One school governor claimed that the wearing of skirts reinforced femininity, courtesy and moderation, as anyone who's ever upset a drunken Scotsman will testify. Alan, which brainy rodent is smarter than the average mouse?
Oh, it's another gene. We stuck a gene in a rat, and it's now beating 8-year-old chess grandmasters. And it's extremely clever. It's cleverer than anything, and it's virtually human. They're going to remake Fantasia with live action. And Mickey will be played by something wearing a trap and eating a piece of cheese. That's all there is to it. I mean, they've stuck this gene in this mouse. It's got extremely clever. It now runs a laboratory.
I mean, I think if human beings have discovered a gene that makes you more intelligent, I don't think we should be putting it into other species. I think we need it. I mean, also, it's the cats I feel sorry for. We would be a nation of bewildered tabbies just standing there while being outwitted by these Moriarty mice. Running out from under the skirting board and quoting Boyle's Law at you.
Scientists experimenting on mice have found a gene which they think could improve learning and memory in humans. A group of mice were selected, capable of performing basic simple tasks, such as recognising brightly coloured objects or presenting the national lottery draw. In a more complicated experiment, smart mice were injected with 2 pints of lager, then next day forced to remember who they'd called their best friend the night before. Scores at the end of round 3 are Andy and Peter 11, but Alan and Fred clinging to their lead with 13 points. Before we start the final round, here's a letter sent to Alton Town Council.
Cemetery Users Group Meeting. I write to inform you that I have arranged a meeting at St. Lawrence Church Hall on Thursday, July the 8th at 7:30. This meeting is an ideal opportunity for the users of Alton Cemetery to come along and air their views.
Thanks to Mr. Gay of Alton for that. Andy, your piece of music.
It's a family affair.
Andy, which TV family is crumbling apart?
Oh, this is tragic. Is it the Oxo family?
It is.
I nearly said the Bisto family, but that's just a bunch of kids going, Bisto, isn't it? The Oxo family are being downsized. There's an ad, in fact, I saw it go out, where their kids have all left home, and they're sad. Why would they be sad? Why aren't they having a party? The kids have all flown the coop. They've all gone to live in sin with their girlfriends, or they're all pushing cocaine in South America or something. So that family is disappearing from our screens, and OXO are replacing it, presumably, with a more hip family.
The boy sniffs the cubes and the girl wears it in her navel.
The current OXO family are to be axed after being on our screen since 1983. When the current family began all those years ago, Britain's TV screen were filled with the likes of Bruce Forsyth, Cilla Black and Richard Whiteley. Where are they now? The news of the ad's demise has not been universally well received, especially by Delia Smith, whose six-part cookery series, How to Unwrap a Stock Cube, Linda Bellingham admitted that on the last day, everybody had a lump in their throat. Fred, who's proved that absence really does make the heart grow fonder?
All right. Men.
Two points.
When I can't let you write this down, Fred. If I drew it on my pad, I'd get arrested. But men maintain a higher state of sexual excitement when they're separated from their partners than women do. They've kept them away for women for 3 weeks and they've come out of it like greyhounds coming out of a trap. And women all said, oh, my God, here's my headache again, and turn around. And it's just that. It's something to do. It's some bizarre evolutionary thing about protecting sperm. Very complicated. Stop other men sleeping with their partners. I normally do this by changing the locks or hitting their car with a sledgehammer. But apparently nature has said that if a man is away from a woman, when he gets back to that woman, he is in a better state to produce more children and drive out any alien things that have managed to enter into her while she was away. I read all that in the Telegraph, amazingly, and was disgusted. I normally expect to read these things in the Radio Times.
So did I get 2 points?
Ask your wife when you get home, Fred.
Have you been away long?
Similar research into facial hair. And apparently men's beards grow a lot faster if sexual expectancy is increased. And
well, you...
this is just this afternoon's growth. I mean, I shaved at lunchtime.
We should be able to walk home tonight.
Just remember he was singing Stand By Your Man.
Well, you were singing
Donald Wears Your Trousers.
Psychologist Ted Shackelford of Florida Atlantic University has proved that for men, being apart makes them love their partner more. The research shows that the best way to make your husband love you is to spend as much time away from him as possible. So that's what Fergie was up to all the time. Alan, who didn't fancy an eyeful of a foreign tower?
That's an obscure little number. It's a woman called Beryl, or Basil, or something. I mean, in trousers. I mean, it's a woman who won a holiday, £1,000, weekend break to Paris, and said you wanted to go to Blackpool. Is that the woman? Yes. Probably Thatcher. Loves going back to Blackpool. Any reason to go back to Blackpool. She did one of those things which says, I want to be a member of the House of Lords because, and filled it in and sent in all the bottle tops. And won this trip to Paris and didn't fancy it. I can't remember her name. I mean, if Andy can remember her name, we can swear this evening.
Are you taunting me? I can picture the tower. Here it is. Do I get a point for that? It's the Eiffel Tower and the Blackpool Tower.
29-year-old Sharon Davidson from West Yorkshire, having won a £1,000 weekend break in Paris, opted to go to Blackpool instead. She said she didn't fancy the idea of spending 6 hours return on Eurostar. If she wanted to spend that long on a train, she'd just go one stop on a Virgin Rail. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Peter.
Well, there was recently a lot in the papers about the merits and demerits of chewing gum and how it was brought to this country by Americans during the war.
And I came across this letter in the Daily Telegraph, so my thanks to Mrs. Honor Carlyon of Witten in Middlesex. Sir, wartime scene. A GI gets into a railway carriage, beams at the only other occupant, an elderly lady, and starts to move his lips and jaws. The lady watches intently until she gets out at the next station. Thank you for talking to me, she says, but I'm deaf and couldn't read your lips.
Fred, I'm not quite sure how this one's going to work. It's from the Oban Times from the 19th of August, and Ricky Salter sent it to me. And you might need to know a bit about the geography of the west of Scotland. It says, police received a complaint that as the ferry came into the island of Col on Thursday, three girls stood on the pier and mooned. And now this obviously doesn't happen a lot up the west of Scotland, because it goes on to explain by bending over and showing their buttocks. The complainant reported that they did not recognise any of them, but at least one of them was a Col girl. Meaning she came from the island of Col. Not that he recognised her buttocks.
Alan.
Well, mine is not entirely dissimilar, but it's a few miles south. It comes from the Liverpool Echo. It's Andrew Firth, a 43-year-old plasterer arrested in Sefton Park and charged with indecent exposure, told the police that he'd planned to join a nudist club and was walking around without clothes on to see what it felt like.
Thank you, Alan. Let's look at the final scores. Andy and Peter have a very creditable 16 points, but Alan and Fred have just clung to their lead and are this week's victors with 17. And we leave you with an item seen in the Jersey Evening Post by Richard Renwood.
The Helier Morris men could soon be entertaining Kosovan refugees if a plan by one of the troops gets off the ground. Richard Day intends to contact the Morris Ring in England to enlist support for his idea. He believes this activity will help Kosovans regain a sense of normality.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Peter Donaldson and Fred McCauley. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.